Good evening. It is 7 o'clock and our trusted colleague Pat will be a few minutes late, but we wanted to get started in any event, and we're working our way through Secret Talks Volume 5 by E.J. Gold, which is called Work of Groups. And we've made our way through to Chapter 54, and we spent a little bit of time on it last week. We're going to continue just because of the depth of it's a catalog of wonderful activities. So, and what we usually do is we start by reading a summary of the commentary from the prior week and of the notations of the characteristics of group. And Ivan, go ahead and get us started, please.
Okay. Wednesday, September 27th, 2017. Work of Groups, number 28. One, Roman numeral one, observations of working with people. One, working with invoking one's presence with one's electrical field could have an influence on people around one. If you pay attention, you will notice people respond. They don't know what they're responding to, but they do respond. Two, the customer is always right is a position we can learn from. If you're a voyager caught in a position and someone is blasting away, you can respond, yes, I think you're right. They are wanting to fight and you take that impulse away. It's a strategy you can use if you are working on your presence and get caught in negativity, and use it to work through it. I'll give you that again. And use it to work through it.
Yeah.
In adopting this method, you will deeply influence those around you. And that's it.
Thank you, Ivan. And welcome, Pat.
Thank you.
To our little campfire chat. Okay.
Campfire chat. Oh, how cozy.
So we're last week we started working through some of the exercises, and I want to bring up a couple. Ivan, you recall the Des Moines exercise, right?
Yes.
And in that one, that's setting an intention of your destination, that you're going there with purpose. We spent a fair amount of time on the exercise, the customer is always right.
Yes.
And I will be making a, we'll be talking about that a little bit more a little bit later. But I wanted us to get a little further into the chapter. I want to save the last few minutes for the last three paragraphs of the chapter 54 and make sure we get some time. So everybody remind me, as we get toward the end of the hour, we still need to do those three chapters, okay?
No, the two paragraphs.
All right, and that's we'll catch that up later.
Good.
But I was just wondering, just offhand, did anybody have a chance to look through the chapter? Was anything that caught their attention in terms of an exercise, or should we just plow ahead? I think we should plow ahead.
Plowing sounds appropriate.
So now last week we never really got, did we get to the muzzling exercise? Do you remember,
no,
Ivan?
We didn't,
yeah. Okay, let's start there. That's on page 134 toward the top there. Let's see. Why don't you go ahead and read that paragraph for us, Pat?
The muzzling exercise. Cycle manifestations. If we laugh or talk too loudly for the situation, we can try to stifle these outbursts unless we believe they are intentional.
I think we did cover some of that. Did we not?
Not with that title.
Not with that title. Harry, for some reason, when I read this one this morning, I thought of you. Are you there? I thought I heard his sound, John. Okay, well, maybe he's not there. Anybody want to take a shot on that one?
It's a very straightforward instruction. We can try to stifle these outbursts, which means first you'd have to be observing yourself if you were involved in it. And secondly, you would need to have the, let's call it the decorum to, pardon. You would need some manner in which to muzzle. The muzzling itself is not described. The manner of muzzle. That's what I've always found this an incomplete description of what I believe the exercise is.
Let's define it then. There you go.
The muzzling exercise means to have the capacity to muzzle oneself under conditions where it's deemed appropriate to be muzzled.
Okay, so the first thing that Pat said, and I think this is inherent in many of these exercises, there's a fundamental requirement that we are self-observing in an objective manner, that we are actually watching ourselves. And I've seen just about everybody here, actually. I don't know Dan as well, but I know everybody else in the room here has done that.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them notice
to some degree
that, you know, I talk in a certain way, I'm not good at this. They notice those manifestations in particularly in group, because you have a group mirror. Okay, so self-observation, fundamental to it. The second part is what?
The capacity to do a modification of your manifestation. Now, it says muzzle and it says stifle. But to me, that is not stopping it. It means pulling it back a degree. So it's a subtleness to
thank you.
What may be an outburst. You might want to still make the same communication, just not with the trauma. So
a few months ago, you'll remember this, but a few months ago, we were on a different book, and I don't remember what book we were on.
Oh, okay.
But we were here, and EJ happened to be in the office.
Yes.
And he came out twice during that night. I don't know if you remember that, you guys. And he said to me, he said, slow down, speak more softly. Okay? So I was in a position where I couldn't not talk. Yet I had to modify.
That's the key.
So I had to be aware of how the anxiety that I have sometimes when I speak with too much energy, too much whatever, and he was commenting on that. So I had to do a lot of observation there because I didn't want to just blindly follow what I thought an instruction was. I had to find the proper modality. For instance, sometimes I do speak loud, and I'm making it, I should emphasize, and if I have passion about it, I want to get that in there too. But sometimes it's mechanical. And so we have that. So the muzzling, like Pat is saying, it is not a stop.
No.
Not a stop exercise.
No, it's a correction.
Course correction. Yeah.
Wouldn't you say this also requires the perception, I'm trying to think what it is, the sensing of the space as well. In other words, the mood or atmosphere, you know, that you're manifesting in as to your appropriateness. In other words, it's actually like a divided attention exercise, I would think.
What was the chapter where we were on where Kay came into the room where they were, and she was yelling and screaming. And then, and clearly that was an example of somebody
mm-hmm.
that needed to work with muzzling
mm-hmm.
their manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's all that we've seen that over the years as well. So that's so, these are things, there's so many exercises here. Find one that you carry with you.
Yes.
You know, that you very much carry with you.
That's totally the key to all of this.
And you don't know, Pat is a singer. So I don't know, 2 or 3 times a week, every week she's practicing with professionals on that. That's what works for her. She carries things like that. You have to find the modality or modalities that work for you. Okay, what's another one?
Well, I'd like to read the next one because it is
so
strikingly simple sounding. Learn to extract substance. Number one, let me just point out that I was emphasizing there deliberately from ordinary food. So this is a highly, highly, highly sophisticated, technical, and to me, very difficult exercise to carry out because it means that you're not eating in sleep. You're not eating for the machine.
Can you give us some how-tos on that? There's some people in the audience
yes.
that have their hands up.
Hand the phone to the lady, please.
Yeah.
At the 1983 convention in New York, I believe it was the Diamond Talk, with EJ and Samuel Avital and Lee Lozwick, he gave instructions for transubstantiation of food, very specifically. And it was possible in the space to do that. It was such a strong space. And you're definitely not eating for the machine because you're working very hard to invoke your presence and sense the food and to draw the energy up into your head, actually. As I recall, because I sense the energy in that top chakra. That's how I would describe it.
So the result is if you're doing it properly, you sense the energy in that top chakra.
Well, that's my experience of it, and he was giving instructions to pull it up into that area, as I recall. Now, I'm not sure if the Diamond Talk, it might be a talk of the month, and I thought it was...
I think it is.
I think it's included in that talk, but I'm not sure because
I'd have to go back.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and read it.
Find that talk?
Well, it's on the talkofthemonth.com as a PDF. You can download it.
You can buy it. And
or you can, I don't think we have a recording available, so it's not on CD.
Not
but you can,
that.
But you can download it, if and it should be listed as one of the publications of Talk of the Month, isn't it? I'm almost sure, because I remember a picture of those three.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. That's beautiful. That's the most concise, exact description that we have. From my recall, I have experiences, but that's a very strong delivery of instruction from EJ at the time while we were eating, and it was a group invocation, for a fact. Yeah. Good recall. Learn to extract substance, number 2, from air. When looking at our fellow humans, remember that they, as well as we, are going to die someday, and feel pity for them for the way in which they must die. If they have not worked on themselves, pity those who have no possibilities but do not feel superior to them. From a natural standpoint, it is they who are right, and we who are idiots are struggling against our ordinary destiny. Now, if we look at the headline from today's Las Vegas Sun newspaper, it says, Valor in Vegas, which is as close to an ordinary manifestation form of extract substance number 2 from air that I can think of. That's going in the correct direction. That's where you want to be sensing.
Good.
Is that way. Now, to get more technical about which... Valor in Vegas.
Valor in Vegas.
Valor.
Yeah.
Yeah. As, you know, what to do with the result of the circumstances of a massacre, raise it up, you know, if you are heroic, be heroic, but I mean, don't grovel, don't fall into the abyss, you know, and that's what this particular thing says. We don't feel pity. We don't
right.
feel superior. In fact, if we think about it at all, logically, like, what are we doing making this idiotic attempt to struggle against our ordinary destiny? So that's, you know, that's the framing
uh-huh.
of it that I have for it at the moment. What do you want to say, Evan? Yeah, get way into these technical things. Learn to extract substance number 3 from impressions. I love this. There's so much material on this and EJ stuff. Do not go to the opera thinking that you will get the highest possible impression. The Last Supper provides the means for extracting the first and second substances. The entry of the Holy Ghost is personified in Elijah, our perpetual guest at every meal. Yeah. Can you approach? I know we worked at it for decades. We used to have community Sunday meals. We did work at extracting number 3 from impressions. I know that. We actually had practices at the table, the purpose of which was to enable us to develop some sensing in that arena.
Go ahead and read the last paragraph. That's kind of a little bit of a summary.
Somehow get the enabling substance. If the machine is running properly, we can fill it with fuel. The little pill you drop into the gas tank that turns water into gasoline, the transformation of water into wine. The engine may run rough at first, but even vinegar or new wine is better fuel than water.
I want to say one thing, and then I'd like to ask Silverdale's impression of these four paragraphs. But when you go to an invocational dinner, you leave, in certain ways, you leave the machine at the door.
Mm-hmm.
So you start in on that because of the presence of the colleagues,
mm-hmm.
your work colleagues, you go with your best in hand.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go to kill time, you go to live high life together. And so you have a natural forum of excellence, and you get to exercise that
mm-hmm.
with your fellow workers.
And the training is inherent in some of these references to the Hebrew tradition of Elijah is always a guest at the table. Always. You may not see him. You may not be aware of him. But he is always at the table. That was a premise of the work table sitting together for a meal.
Yeah.
So, and what we were doing was taking the sacrament. And, you know.
It became the sacrament because we were able to get there.
Yeah.
And I guess, Silverdale, when I think about it, this sounds, there's a lot of material about this in the Gurdjieffian work. And do you want to just give us an impression of this whole area for us, please?
Sure. You're right. This is straight out of the Gurdjieff literature. But look, essentially what EJ is saying here, or what he's illustrating here, is his basic premise of human biological machine. We as individuals are comprised of two diametrically opposite parts. One part is the force which we manifest through our historical personality, and we do that just automatically from the moment of our conception. EJ's saying we also have within ourselves an essential self, which we might call etheric or spiritual or whatever. And what we are attempting in our evolutionary transformation, what we're attempting to accomplish is to pacify the historical personality in such a way that the essential self can become the center of our gravity and the dominant, our dominant manifestation. So one way this can be done is if we just kind of learn to muzzle our historical personality and pacify it in such a way that we can allow our essential self, this other electrical field, to begin to come to the surface.
Nice.
And then, of course, when we consider, Gurdjieff talks about three different types of foods that sustain us as individual.
Before you go to three, I want to emphasize something that Silverdale said. If we can muzzle the machine, it gives the essential self a chance to come out. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's a simple technology. Thank you so much, Silverdale. Continue.
That's right. And you know, that's in accordance with, we replace one habit with another habit. You know, instead of allowing the force and momentum of our historical personality to kind of run down the road of life, if we simply replace that habit with a willingness to become more voluntary and passive in outward manifestations, then that essential self will gradually come to the surface because there's room for it to come to the surface. That's the muzzling part. And then this next thing, the three different types of food, all this is, what this is essentially saying is that as we're eating our meals or drinking, if we could just, again, focus on allowing the essential to self-remember our essential self within, then we kind of begin to feel begin to feel the sensory percept. We feel a vibratory sensation as we eat our meals. Okay, that's our essential self. That's actually even more intense when we focus on conscious breathing. You know, we breathe in and we can actually, it's like plucking a string on a stringed instrument. You just kind of begin to feel the vibration when you're breathing. You'll feel that essential self. And of course, once you've developed that habit and the essential self is beginning to really come into its own, then it becomes much more easy to perceive the third impressions, which is really the presence of the absolute himself, herself, itself. And that's when the Holy Spirit or makes its presence known as a part of our own essential self. That's the third food. So
remember Silverdale's description of the third one for a little later when there's something I'm going to bring up, okay? Go ahead, Aileen.
Yeah, I do have a comment in response to what I heard Pat saying about a group coming together, you know, about the effectiveness or the energy of a group invocation. I'm recalling that I always felt that one of the strongest things that we've done here as a group was to have the Easter observance. And then, I mean, it was sort of, in a small way, we had a sort of a Sabbath observance where we used to have karma yoga. We would come on a Sunday and work on the property, work at the land, divide up and do various jobs and so on, and then have the Sunday dinner, which was an invocational dinner. But Easter, I recall particularly strongly as being this observance, and what EJ would ask us to do, particularly on an Easter Sunday, we would come to the land as early as possible. And he said that, okay, we're going to go out and work. You can work in the garden. You can work on this, painting these walls, or we're going to empty out, you know, we're going to reorganize some storage or something like that, you know, different crews. And this is the, you think of this Easter Sunday, sunrise to sunset, as a lifetime, that you're going to experience a lifetime here. And so you recall, you think about as you're working, think right now, in fact, you're going to choose what is the work you're going to choose to do for this lifetime. And now you're going to spend a whole lifetime. And I would generally choose to work in the garden. And I think it was because I felt like, okay, if I'm going to choose a lifetime, I'm going to get my hands in the dirt and feel like I'm getting close to this planet here and dealing with plants and breathing the air and being out in the sun and so on. And so I would do that. And then basically what would happen is after literally 6 or 8 hours of this, and you would be, you know, we would be doing as far as possible self-observing, mm-hmm. and, you know, I don't think I was ever any good at paying any attention to breathing the way that the exercise that Silverdale was talking about. But we would come together. Then at 5 or 6 o'clock, and we all came and sat down at dinner, that was the preparation we had all made. Everybody had been basically meditating or concentrating on this sense of an entire lifetime. It was a stretching of time. You know, it was changing your time sense, and it was changing your, and it was invoking more presence during the day and so on. And then everybody sat down, and just sitting down at the dinner table, then you felt this sort of harmony. You know, you felt this group awareness come on, and I think that was contributing to the transubstantiation of the food. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I hear him saying here the Last Supper. You know, it's like saying then it's Easter and it's the Passover Seder and it's the Last Supper.
Beautiful.
And you're what is that Last Supper? Well, this is, you're bringing the sunset is coming, and you're bringing a lifetime to a close. Mm-hmm. And this Last Supper is like, it's like, it was like for this exercise, at any rate, for Easter, was like saying, this is your conscious death. You know, you're sitting down at this meal, and you're sitting down together, and everyone has spent a lifetime today at voluntary work, voluntarily having chosen something and doing this work, and now we're going to prepare for the end of this lifetime together. It was very powerful. I just thought it was potent. It was a very potent thing
totally
to do.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. You know, the description of the exercise so far and this chapter to this point is, it's very positive. It's very encouraging. It's very, you can do it, you know, kind of approach. I mean, it's a welcoming invitation to do the exercise. In my feeling about the next collection, because you said look ahead and see,
yeah,
you know, what I want to look at. the next five paragraphs are heavy duty, kind of like
where should we be?
Like at? the whole. But I would go to 135. All of 135 and the top paragraph of 136. I would have the second paragraph of 136 be where we jump back in. I know that you need to know all that other part, but we don't have the time to get into the content of those other six paragraphs, in my opinion.
Lead us along.
The big dough. We must keep making
page 136
a big dough with every pulse beat for self-remembering. Let me just editorially indicate that the spelling of D-O-H and speaking it as the word dough is from the musical octave description of do being the first tone that is in the beginning of an octave, and also being the last tone in an octave, but an octave higher. So the big do with every pulse beat for self-remembering. We must do this exercise with all our might. There is a strong tendency for the octave to devolve after do. Weird, I was using the word devolve not too long ago. We think we are still doing it, but really we are just experiencing the reverberations from the first do. Each time we think we are hitting a new do, we are actually striking a lower and lower note until we get up the energy to strike the do once again. Now, it goes with the whole concept of the self-remembering exercise, which of course has to be taken apart. The part that we're talking about here has to do with how do you apply a beat or a rhythmical or a remembering or some kind of tactic to keep redoing your self-remembering so your do keeps being renewed. This is a very tricky thing. If you've ever played an instrument, especially a string instrument, and you're hitting that G chord with your finger on the guitar or the bass file, or even when you're playing an instrument and you're hitting that tone with your breath, you know, you have to keep applying new, fresh energy every single time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So everyone is brand new.
Every single time is fresh. It's fresh and new. And that pulse beat, however you've come to it for yourself, that pulse beat for most folks can be aligned with their actual physical breath. For some people, it is with a heartbeat. For some people, they use their stamps. So they take a step. They take another step, you know, used in the walking meditation. So you have a clue here when it says we must keep making a big do with every pulse beat for self-remembering. And that's just, I mean, that's an enormous task, but it is the only manner in which you will accomplish the process of self-remembering, because otherwise it just goes away. You go to sleep, you know, you devolve back into normal walking sleep.
So we keep injecting into the instrument we're playing here a new energy to make each one brand new.
Every time.
And if you look at the top of the next page, 137, it says, we must swim upstream.
Yes.
Everything in life is against the work. Mm-hmm. Everything we encounter, every organism, etc. nature is against the word. Man serves nature, and nature serves the absolute. Therefore, man only indirectly and mechanically serves the absolute. So we must swim upstream. It doesn't get easier. It doesn't get easier. It gets more subtle. And the more that our group forms and goes to other level, the more subtle we must become to participate. And that's a good thing. That's an okay thing. Go ahead.
Well, it occurred to me I could tie some things together.
Yes.
Because it doesn't get easier, but we do have some assisting factors, I'll call them. You mentioned one in your email. I would like to draw attention to something that, the phrase George mentioned about substituting habits, and we've been given that a phrase for a technique for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, what I'm trying to point to is like the very first simple, I say simple, it is simple, easy, no, exercise in this book about not giving into talking about anything negative or just going into negative mechanical manifestations.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact words of how it was put, but that is such a common everyday ordinary practice through many hours of your day of just, you know, slipping into that mechanicality and just making attempts to substitute that habit. Can be a real assisting factor to this injecting with new energy focus, because you don't want to go to there. You just don't allow yourself to go to the negative drivel that comes out of your mouth.
Eloquently put.
She's drooling on herself right now, but
so I'm going to complete that sentence, the paragraph that comes after the big dough. It says, after the self-remembering exercise is mastered, which is non-identification, the next stage is total identification. In watered down versions of schools, they always say, just let it happen. Cosmic consciousness for the ordinary person is impossible, having no intermediate step of self-remembering, separating consciousness from action. Now, I will not attempt to approach any of that. The only reason I read it is because I don't feel right jumping paragraphs. But it says, with this method of work, however that comes to be, we may work for years without apparent change. And I was just bringing that in to play because what Marvette was speaking about is something that refers also to the very first one we read this evening, which is the muscling exercise. There's an internal muscle as well as an external muscle. The internal muscle is the one that we apply when we are going to work with not manifesting negative emotion. No gossip, etc. And those things you do not necessarily notice a change from applying those exercises. That's not their purpose. Their purpose is not to get you to, you know, a star, head of the class, you know, move along to the next grade. So I just wanted to put that in
good.
There because
thank
it's
you.
Part of the sequence of what we're looking at here.
He's being very clear here that you're not just trying to change your state. You're not cultivating. He's talking about what does he call them? Schools.
Watered down
versions of schools. Yeah, I mean, it strikes me as being, you know, like the self-help exercises or whatever. It's like if you want to get ecstatic, you know, or if you want to you know, cast off your ordinary melancholy or whatever, you know, you can jump out of planes with a parachute, or you can climb mountains or something like that, or, you know, you can get your adrenaline going. But don't you think this is an amazingly clear evocation of the exercises, of these basic exercises, like what we've been reading in Practical Work on Self and the Invocation of Presence for so many years. I mean, he's saying, I love this, after the self-remembering exercise is mastered, oh, sure, I'll do that next week, you know, after it's mastered, which is non-identification. So, you know, this is great. Like, okay, self-remembering is non-identification. Yeah, it's like I'm having the attention, you know, my attention is being placed on the machine or the historical personality, as Silverdale might say. So that, what am I developing? I'm developing that which is observing.
Yes.
And that's not, so it's not identified.
Right.
It's observing the, and then he has this other formulation here where he says, having no intermediate step of self-remembering, which is this non-identification, separating consciousness from action. Okay. Hey, I'm walking through life, I'm sleepwalking, I'm acting, I'm having emotions, I'm talking with people, I'm doing this and that. So the self-remembering is actually separating, that's the fair witness, it's the part that's separating, it's cultivating that essential self, we might say, you know, that platform, that foot in the other world. And, you know, and observing from that viewpoint, I think this is a very interesting formulation of the same exercises, you know, that he's been recommending.
One thing that I admire my colleagues here so much, and I don't know how many times, Ivan, over the years, when we get to a certain stellar place in the invocation, he says, it's amazing how clear and simple this is.
Well, it doesn't mean easy. That's what we say over and over again. Yeah. Marvette said it too. Yeah.
Let's jump to the last three paragraphs. And do you want to start us off, Pat, and then Ivan, and then I'll finish?
He talked about his early groups. The third group is the one which is usually called the first group. G said these were people who had literally been taken from the street. They were not convinced of the need for work. He set up a series of experiments to find out if someone could be convinced of the need for work and kept working by intentional but outer reminders.
External reminders can provoke one to remember oneself. G wanted to find out if just any idiot could be made conscious simply through the use of mechanical reminders. He discovered that this was not possible because real work requires will. We must have authority over the machine to bring it to work and keep it working for our work.
When the self-remembering exercise was given to the early groups, it was to activate presence with complete abandonment, regardless of personal states. This is what is meant by going the whole hog and the postage. I wanted to take a minute on these last three because I thought it was so insightful. The depth of experimentation that EJ did. I remember many, many, many years ago, I think right when I first got here, you know, we were talking about HBM, which I had fallen in love with, and he says, Well, when you really get it, it should be something that you can describe to any truck driver. And when we are looking at our own work, part of our work and our obligation is to work with others, okay? Is to work with others. And I'm experimenting right now with that. It's like, how do I get out there into the public? And the second paragraph where he says it takes will, somebody has to want it. But what is the nature of that? What does it look like when you see that little flavor of somebody, the taste that they want? And as the last lines in the my dinner with EJ was, you know, I've been given, I said to him, I've been given some fine pastries. How do I get back to the pastry shop? And that's what this is. How do we get ourselves back to, how do we recognize that in another and know that it is time to start helping?
Now you're into something. I don't know why you always do this. Bring me right into present time with my current life and the example in the book and everything else. But so last week, I wasn't here. I mean, I wasn't physically sitting here with you all in front of the camera last week. And the day after that, when I wasn't here, was a Chico day. And I went to a store called Food Max with two X's. Food Max is similar to a food co-op in the sense that the workers, the employees, are all actually part owners of the business they're franchised in. I don't know how that works, but I have noticed it to be a quite interesting place to visit, and it does have several items that I purchase. I finished my quick trip in and out of the Food Max and walked outside, and there was a young man leaning against a pole in a uniform that had a patch on it, white uniform with a patch, and he had a put money in it container and a symbol around the side of it. And I went up to talk to him. You know, what are you collecting for? Hi, how are you doing? La, la, la. The guy wandered around in his explanation of what he was doing and why, and was telling stories about uncle and et cetera. And I kept trying to make eye contact and, you know, get to the, okay, you're standing here, what's really going on? And I had to stop myself from saying, let me tell you something that might help. I wanted to give him the four lines. Now, the reason I didn't is because I couldn't guarantee that I would be able to come back there again in the next couple of days, and see how he was. And I didn't feel like it was the correct thing to do, to drop something there and not water it. So
okay.
I did not do that in that instance, but I did maintain eye contact with him, gave him a huge amount of money to put in a little coin, and said something that was appropriate for him and the story that he had told me. My point being about that was that there is not a rote by the book, do it this way aspect to any of the teachings that EJ has offered us. He has always made it so that you have to make the application to yourself, for yourself, at the time that you're doing it.
To yourself, for yourself.
To yourself, for yourself, in the situation that you're in.
In the specific situation.
Exactly.
But we're getting to a point, so I read this, and I, after reading all these exercises, and I read this thing, and I thought, here's a guy with terrific creativity.
Yes.
EJ.
Yeah.
And he's an explorer. I don't know how many different areas of study we've gotten into. Metals, gems, camo,
chocolate, painting,
rare
jewelry,
coins,
art, museum, theater, dance, yes.
Stamps, rare stamps.
Education.
And EJ penetrates, he knows how to learn these, all these areas so dramatically. But each of us has our own canvas to paint. Allow yourself to discover that canvas and follow it through.
Mm-hmm.
Work on it because it's calling out to you. And in the last few weeks, I'm having more and more of these experiences where it's calling
mm-hmm.
to me in very small, specific ways, just like your guide.
Yeah, yeah.
Did Pat's such a voyager. She, for someone like her, to stop to talk to somebody, it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
He was in white, man. He had a patch on his
It was a, whatever it was.
He was a guy.
Pat knew that there's something there to touch on.
Yeah.
And I want you to read these three paragraphs over and over again and sense the moments of discovery that EJ was uncovering. He put himself on the line. Oh, this didn't work. I can guarantee he put in a lot of effort.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
he
yeah.
Was, as he puts it, he was going the whole hog and the postage to in any of those things. Can we do that ourselves? And on that note, well, Marvette's going to give us a comment before
and, and I'm going to...
Well, then you read that next, because I want to close with... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to comment on that, like today, this morning, he gave a Wednesday morning art class, I think, what he called it. And his Wednesday morning art class was to walk around your town and find receptors.
Yep.
For these chocolate powders, the chocolate being something that people are so willing to accept into their lives, and in doing so, you're having encounters.
Yep.
And so that gives you a lot of opportunity to sense and be with people and play in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And like he was saying that he hasn't tried to make any sales. He only happens to have one little sample, which he happened to get from Tamara. And still, people have said, yes, I want this. And so he's really inviting people to go out there and just, you know, this is something that's harmless. People gravitate toward chocolate. It's not anything that's esoteric. They're not going to be afraid of it.
And you don't have to think about it at all.
Yeah, they won't be afraid of it. So you have a known thing that you can, you know, have some interaction about.
Go ahead.
So the paragraph before the last three that we just read says, we cannot get help until we reach the me-fa interval on our own effort. A teacher may want to give enabling substance to help, but it would do no good before reaching the brink. It is not in the teacher's power to give help unless we make necessity. And that's appropriate not only in the circumstance of when you're interacting with folks, if you are, over chocolate or anything else, there is the potential to try and give somebody something because they could really use it. Or there's the opportunity to see if something can unfold and you can be in alignment and assist with that, or you can get yourself out of the way and it just happens, never mind you. But it's really interesting to see that this me-fa paragraph is right before he talks about his early group. Reminded me that the circumstances, and I did not come in on the early group. I was after the first group. But I've heard talk, and I met a few of the folks from the early group. And EJ was a rough and tumble guy. I mean, he really could put it out there on the street. He was very familiar with how people were taking it in or not. And it's interesting to hear this description of what he's saying. He set up a series of experiments to find out if someone could be convinced of the need for work. And he felt, no, you got to have your own will.
There has to be an existent spark.
Has to be something there.
Good.
You can't put it in somebody. You can't insert it. This is we're halfway through. That's why.
So we're reading a document here that is a the experiments of groups in formation and different forms of it.
Yeah.
I want to close though by giving a description of something that happened with me over the last period of time here. I think I mentioned it even in the last class that the exercise, the customer is always right, struck a great note in me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I've done a lot of retail too, which mm-hmm. I love. I love mm-hmm. retail. And in a certain way, my job is retail because I'm dealing directly with the customer.
Sure.
And the idea of, so as you know, my job is financial and taxation,
mm-hmm.
two areas that are of enormous fear points for individuals.
Right.
And I don't like the vibration of fear and desperation that comes off of individuals when I'm dealing with them.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But if you adopt and make them, and so my assumption is they're wrong.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right, right. Yes, they don't need to be doing that. They should stop doing that.
They should stop doing that.
Yeah.
So then I put on the mantle of the customer is always right, and it just flips the space. And I've had objective response from those individuals because of my position. These are individuals that are skilled in many, many ways, and yet this area crumbles them. So I start with how they are at, not how I am at.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been working with this exercise quite a bit, and on Sunday I was volunteering at the Celtic Festival.
Right, right, you said.
And I was there from about 9:30 in the morning, and I got home at about 10:30 at night.
Mm.
It was, and the weather was perfect, the music was beautiful, and it was packed. By about 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening, as it started getting darker, I was getting physically quite tired.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm walking around this event, and it's quite intense with crowds. I'm not usually in a crowd situation.
Right.
I don't usually go to the fairs or to concerts or things like that. And I started feeling, the best I can call it, is the pressure of the psychic difficulty of being in a place like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I started my physically kind of closing down and getting a sense of defensiveness.
Right.
And then it clicked in. The customer is always right. And I looked around and I saw these people, and it just struck me that every one of them was trying their best, whatever that was,
mm-hmm.
to, and this is where we leak into what Silverdale said,
mm-hmm.
to seek the absolute.
Right.
As good or bad a job as they were doing,
right.
Everybody was doing that. And this energy came through me, and it was almost like parting the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to walk through there with lightness of step. Because that exercise came to me, and I entered into it. And so that's a tool that I now have forever.
Mm.
Okay? And it was a thing of great beauty, and I continue to use it. I've been using it the last several days, and just it's a mantra of the customer is always right.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it means, for me then it started to mean, where is that individual as a soul seeking
mm-hmm.
refuge in the absolute?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Somewhere.
Right. What is his eternal spot at this moment?
It may be so minuscule that of course they don't understand it and they're flailing away or
right.
having too many beers, or they're
dancing
like crazy, or they're whatever they're doing, that's how they're expressing it at the time. It was just the clarity of that moment was just something I wanted to share.
I'm glad you did. I'm really glad you did. Yeah, I love hearing experiences of the work of exercises.
Yeah.
Because there is no right or wrong way to do them, but there certainly is something about the fact that there are exercises to be done, which in and of itself means that you're not living your life without some thought or some pondering or some meditation, whatever you want to say. There's some other something besides just going helter-skelter.
And with me, I realize I have a physical tool belt, and I can pull these tools out from time to time.
What a nice
hammers
picture.
And screws and wrenches, and I pull them out, and they work.
Yeah, you put them in this situation and use your skill as a tool handler and
tool user. So anyway, thank you so much for coming this evening, and glad you're back, Pat, with us.
Thank you.
And next week, all the next several chapters are kind of like small guys, and so we'll chew on those as we will.
Yeah.
So we look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night, Silverdale.
Good night.
Thanks for hosting us.